very small amount of data that has been missing data for the MDS 2.0 quality measures. And in regards to trying to take a somewhat conservative approach to examining the measures based or examining the measures based on the MDS 3.0, until we know what exactly that we're looking at, we would, you know, hate to sort of change course without being very certain about why we're changing course and what the difference is in terms of missing data.
And this is Judy with CMS. Another reason we considered is we don't want to force a bad answer. If for some reason they don't have the data at the time they're responding to the MDS, we don't want to force them to answer something that it could really have unintended consequences, you know, either making them look better than they are or worse than they are. So we would just like to have the opportunity to look at that impact first.
But isn't that true of all the responses, even including the ones that you're using? I mean, so you're just saying whenever something is missing, if it's in the measure, the person will be excluded.
If
it's required in the measure, if it's included in the measure algorithm, they're excluded.
If they didn't respond to that item that is used to generate that quality measure. And again, I think our experience has been, but we need to look at the actual quantification, is that the numbers are very small for non-responses, but we do want to have an opportunity to look at that.
This is Sheila Bernard. I think that for the measures that are that include the flu vaccine and the pneumonia vaccine, we are excluding them. I mean, we are including them in the denominator, and in that way, their rate of vaccinations is affected by missing data. For the others, the idea was the rationale for our desire to exclude them is that making the assumption that if someone has a missing UTI or decubiti, that they actually then have the event has different implications. And we would like to look at the pattern of missingness and see whether or not it is there and to what extent before making the decision about the inclusion.
And do you anticipate having that information within a year?
Yes.
Any other questions, RTI, on the either the exclusion issue or the time frame change? Okay, Roberta, you want to go through then the first measure, number 9, the effective pain management short stay?
Yes. One of the questions or recommendations we had was to actually change the title of the measure to actually be, you know, more specific about what we actually are or aren't measuring. So initially the measure's title was the percent of residents with effective pain management. So we proposed to change the measure title for the percent of residents on a scheduled pain medication regime on admission who report a decrease in pain intensity or frequency. And again, you know, we don't want the previous title to sort of suggest a broader concept than we're actually measuring. A second request was that the steering committee requested that the measure evaluate the patient's cognitive status when reporting the patient's experience of pain, like, for example, severe dementia. And we agree that the cognitive status is extremely important to measure, and it is evaluated as part of the MDS. However, it has not been included in the development of this pain measure, and it also affects the other pain measures as well. It wasn't clear from the steering committee's required condition how we'd use the evaluation of the resident's cognitive status when reporting on the patient's experience of pain. We absolutely will be examining the association between cognitive status and the report of pain when we further sort of, you know, test the measure once the data become available.
This is Naomi Nierman. It seems to me that if a patient is deemed sufficiently cognitively impaired to be able to report their own pain, that a different an observational assessment would be conducted. Does that make sense?
Do you mean, could you ask that again?
The whole idea behind this is to do patient-centered measure and to and to go forward towards self-reporting, with the exception of people who cannot self-report. So there are assessment already in place that allow caregivers, professional caregivers, to observe pain in cognitively impaired patients. And would we not want to use those rather than the alternative, which is to forego any assessment? So those who are cognitively impaired, we don't want to employ a self-reporting mechanism, but rather an observational one by caregivers.
You bring up an important point. This is something that was definitely discussed during our technical expert panel, where we were looking at proposed new measures. And it's something that we want to think about developing in the future, but we were concerned about really being able to, again, evaluate what was coming in terms of the data for patients who could not self-report, and chose to focus specifically, at least initially, in regards to patients who could self-report, in regards to accuracy.
So I guess what you're saying is that this measure would apply only to those who are not deemed cognitively impaired sufficiently to report to report on themselves. Mm-hmm. So it would leave out those who are cognitively impaired.
Well, initially when RAND developed the new pain measures, they were able to find in their their pilot work, 87% of their sample was able to complete the pain interview. 9% of the residents were not approached, and 3% were unable to complete the pain interviews. On their validation sample, they were able to find that 89% of the validation sample completed the pain interview, and their sample was nationally representative of, you know, the varying degrees of cognitive impairment in the nursing home residents. So, you know, we think that you're absolutely right that we want to go further with this, but again, this being a new measure, we wanted to test this out, see how it performed during reliability testing, and then come forward to further develop the measure.
So I'm still not clear, what population would you test this on exactly?
This would be, for any any nursing home resident who is able to complete the pain interview.
And thus has been assessed as being cognitively able to do so. Gone through an assessment first.
Right, but that would include, you know, patients who are at least, you know, moderate moderately cognitively impaired.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Saliba's work in terms of testing the measure, they wanted to be sure that they directly assessed the resident's level of pain, and there was concern about patients with cognitive impairment being able to complete the interview. Mm-hmm. And it was found during her validation work that 89% were able to complete the interview.
I have to say, I don't work in nursing homes, but that number seems really high to me. I don't know if anybody else wants to weigh in on that. Mm-hmm. But I'm not here to question that, but it does surprise me.
Oh.
When speaking to experts in the hospice field on pain management and pain assessment, their concern was that such a large population in nursing homes do have Alzheimer's and other cognitive impairment, that to use a measure this for self-reporting purposes is a little risky, lest we leave out a large part of the population. So I think we just have to be sure that we have the right denominator and that we are that we take care of the rest of the patients who may be in pain but cannot report it on their own. So if we can agree on a denominator, I suppose we can go ahead with this.
Any further questions on the pain measure then?
I have one other question. As I recall, this was one measure that we actually put in a totally different bucket, which has to do with not time-limited endorsement, but rather do not go forward at all until this is sorted out. Is that not right? Am I remembering wrong?
The measures that are up for discussion on this call today were measures where you had put in requirements for changes, and you have the response from the developer. So now the vote is this response adequate?
Okay, I understand.
Hello, this is Bob Zorowitz. Can anybody hear me? Just
yes.
Making sure.
Yes.
I could not unmute before, so I was unable to respond, and then I had to. Then I got cut off. So forgive me if I'm repeating anything that was said before. There was a question about demented patients being able to self-report pain, and the 89% seeming too high.
Yes.
My experience, since I work in nursing homes and have for many years, and the literature does support that,
okay.
That even with fairly moderate to advanced dementia, patients are still able to report. And the MDS 3.0, while allowing self-report, if the patient is not able to respond properly to the MDS, which they can only tell by actually administering the instrument, then the staff can use. Then the staff can report. So mm-hmm. In either case, the MDS will have data on pain, whether they're demented or not. But my experience and the literature shows that even people with fairly advanced dementia can still report pain.
Mm-hmm. Another question I'd like to pose, now, is this the way the data will be collected, is this a questionnaire that the resident will actually fill out, or is this a person-to-person question?
Oh, good question. This
interview.
Is actually a person-to-person question.
Okay. Well, that helps, yes. Okay.
Yeah, this is very different, Bob Zorowitz again. It's very different than the MDS 2.0, which relies on chart entries.
Mm-hmm.
This will be a direct interview of the patient.
And one more question. The way this is constructed, what do we do about patients who come in who are on pain medication when they're admitted, and that is so well controlled the pain that there's no need to aim for reduction in pain?
Well, what in regards to sort of what our thought process was, at least in regards to the development, we were focusing on the issue that it, in regards to the measures, that this would be, in fact, sort of a positive measure, mm-hmm. in hoping that if a patient on admission is on, you know, a scheduled regimen, if they did report a decrease in pain, in other words, they certainly would have to report initially on admission that they were having some, you know, some pain in regards to intensity and frequency, and then it would decrease based on the fact that they were on the scheduled pain regimen. So that patient would not be captured in the measure.
Okay, so a patient who's on pain medication, who's not currently on admission, suffering any pain, will not be included in the denominator.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, all of this makes me a lot more comfortable than I was at the last meeting, at our April meeting.
Thank you. We hope we're really anxious and excited to be able to take a look at the measure and really see this as certainly a measure that we hope to develop even further going forward.
Right. So it would make sense then to, because you're still working on it, if we were to endorse it, to do so on a time-limited basis.
Correct.
This one is only eligible for time-limited endorsement, so the mm-hmm. vote will be to recommend for time-limited endorsement or not recommend at all.
Okay, good. Thank you.
This is Bill, and maybe I'm jumping ahead, so if I am, forgive me. But with the title change, and I like the title change in terms of not only it being reflective of the MDS data that's gathered, but also more of an attempt to word in the positive, if you will. But what's the relationship now with 09 and measure 010? Because what's noted in the RTI document is the word change is the same, and it makes it look like they've morphed into one measure.
Yes, and I apologize. That was just a repeat. That was an error.
Which one?
The NH10. Percent of residents with moderate to severe pain, that did not change.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for pointing that out, and I apologize.
So do they become then kind of the ones, the inverse of the other?
Well, this is the next two measures addresses both short stay and long stay patients, and these are measures that actually have transitioned from the MDS 2.0.
Sure.
So this is looking at patients who report or moderate to severe pain. Again, it's using we're not taking a look at whether they were on a scheduled pain medication on admission and they improved in either the intensity or decrease in frequency of the pain. This is focusing on simply patients who are assessed and have moderate to severe pain.
Okay. Roberta, you want to move on to the next two, which is the severity of pain, short and long stay?
Sure. In regards to the percent of residents with moderate to severe pain, again, the difference between 10 and 11 is whether it's a short stay or a long stay resident. And again, the concerns had to do with the cognitive status of the patient, which, we hope to, address and certainly take a look at the data when it comes in, and then also for both items had to do with the missing data, which again we will be examining very closely once the data start to come in. And then there was another question in regards to an issue in regards to asking about taking a look at, given that the 0 to 10 scale isn't, precisely, it isn't linear, and taking a look at, what the responses are. And again, we would definitely need to take a look at the direction that the measure moves in regards to the intensity and the frequency and what those responses are.
So your request back to us with this would be to continue these as time limited
yes.
And not to do anything with the cognitive limited?
Yes, we would be looking for time limited endorsement.
Until you look at the linearity of the scale. But what about the dementia? I'm not sure what, there's no change. Well, there is a change. You're going to look at it. It goes back to the original we had before.
Right. Historically, even though the MDS did capture information on the patient's cognitive status, we don't know what other than referring to Dr. Saliba's validation work on the extent of, what the answers will be in terms of the patient's cognitive impairment. What we want to do when the when the data come in and looking at reliability is perhaps is to check, for example, the BIM score and the frequency that patients, are able to complete the interview. That's all work that will absolutely, will have to be done. But we weren't sure what the steering committee envisioned in terms of reporting it as part of the measure.
Anyone want to comment on that?
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I have to say that the issue of cognitive impairment has got to be a lot more salient here among long-term patients than short-term patients.
Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. Even the short-term patients can have pretty severe cognitive impairment. But it's not clear to us at this point until we do some of the analyses how to incorporate cognitive impairment into the measure. So it is of concern. The literature does show that cognitively impaired people can report on pain, but it wasn't clear to us by the language of the concern of the committee how to incorporate this into the measure at this point. And so we'd like to use the data that we get in order to understand better the relationship between the cognitive impairment, which is available on the NDS-3, and the responses that we're receiving for this measure.
This is Bill, and I think that's how I would have understood the issue that's before us. I mean, there's no question that the cognitive impairment is a significant issue and factor, but because the data collection methodology changes with 3.0 from 2.0, the it's hard to be able to assess without analysis of the data itself how that impacts and how you would adjust the pain data as a result of that, and so therefore time limited to be able to allow for that analysis.
This is Roberta. We will certainly look, as you said, when the data begins to come in and take a look at, for example, the brief interview for mental status, we'll take a look at the scores and how, in regards to how the patient's pain is reported, we'll definitely be looking to see, how the BIM scores compares to, patient self-report of pain, as well as also the staff assessment for pain. But, you know, again, I wish we were having this conversation perhaps six to 12 months after the data came in, we were really able to analyze it.
This is Bob Zarowitz again. Keep in mind, when the BIMS, the brief interview of mental status, is not connected to the pain interview. Somebody can do poorly on the brief interview of mental status, showing cognitive impairment, but still be able to do the pain interview. So they're not. We don't know whether they're going to be connected or not until the MDS has collected a bunch of data, mm-hmm. which is why this is time limited.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I still feel comfortable with the measure the way it is now.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Oh, I'm still just a little confused. After you get data, you're going to look to see whether you would adjust the scores based on cognitive status? What were you thinking of doing? I know we weren't exactly clear ourselves, so.
Oh,
this is Bob Zarowitz again. I can try to, let me try to explain it and see if you can tell me if I'm right or not here.
Sure.
So right now this measure is independent of the brief interview of mental status. The determination whether a resident, patient or resident, can do the pain interview directly is determined entirely by trying to do the interview. If they are unable to do it, then they go to the staff report of pain.
Mm-hmm.
But only then do they go to it. It's independent of whether or not they score well on the brief interview of mental status. Once we've got a lot of data from the MDS 3.0 after 6 or 12 months, then we'll be able to see whether there's some correlation between the BIM score and who can do the direct interview and who requires staff reporting. But on the first time around, they're not going to be able to do that. And this measure, as I said, is independent of the BIMS.
Yep,
the literature
correct.
Still shows that most demented people can self-report their pain. So, I mean, based on that, there's really nothing to suggest that this is necessarily going to be inaccurate because it will include both cognitively intact and cognitively impaired residents.
That's correct. Thank you.
So may I have some clarification? So in that case, we're gathering more data to really make sure that we're on target. Does this mean that in the meanwhile, these data are not publicly reported?
That's correct.
Okay.
The quality measures will not be reported with the MDS 3.0 until there's been an assessment of the data that's coming in and taking a look to see how the quality measures perform.
We expect to do our reporting in early 2012, but we do need to collect two or three quarters of data first.
And you require NQF endorsement before you make your data public. Is that true?
No, but we are seeking endorsement. It's not absolutely required, but we are seeking it.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of timing, many of the quality measures are transitioning to what we see to be a new and improved MDS 3.0. But the measures were also needed to be in terms of the review cycle came up for their 3-year review. Henceforth, we're seeking time limited and endorsement for the measures where the items have significantly changed, or if it's a new measure.
Okay, did that cover both the short and long stay, correct?
Yes, it was the sort of the same issues and questions.
Any further questions on that from the committee members?
Hello?
Yes.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fine. Unmute your phone.
Got a letter from Philip Mayer, his nephew, attorney, and...
Okay. So we'll move on to measure number 8, actually move backwards, to falls with major injury and long stay.
Okay.
I'm sure.
The question in regards to falls. The one question had to do with requested that the measure include minor minor injuries as well as major injuries, because there's variability in how falls are defined, and because interventions are the same for both minor and major falls, and requested additional literature justification regarding the exclusion of minor falls. Our response is that the MDS will be collecting data on both minor and major falls, so that the facility will be able to obtain the rate for both of them. However, it's likely that the sequelae resulting from the major injuries differ from that of the minor injury, so that studying the post-fall pattern of patient outcomes and resource use will differ for the minor versus major injuries associated with fall. We'll examine the distribution of falls with minor and major injury as well as the sequelae during the measure testing. But at this time, our desire is not to report a combined measure. But again, the facility will be able to obtain the rate for both. Another request had been to take a look again at the exclusion of comatose patients. And again, we went back to the literature and also talking about our technical expert panel in regards to the varying opinion about the exclusion of the comatose residents. Some believed that it should be excluded because it was sort of a different set of guidelines for nursing facility residents than residents who are not comatose. And others believe that this should be included in a fall. RTI appreciates the NQF's concerns and recommendation, and we will include the comatose residents in our reporting of the falls measure.
This is Bill, if I can ask a question. On that issue with the major and the minor combining, did you have any feedback on that? And I don't remember if that was touched on when we met face-to-face. Any feedback on that issue from the TEP?
Yes, generally speaking, the TEP wanted to focus on falls with major injury in regards to taking a look that this would be a measure, you know, if it was going to be publicly reported, that the focus should be major falls, but certainly be able to report on minor falls, but not see them as, again, for national reporting, unless, taking a look at the data, there was something that, you know, we wanted to revisit.
So you're recommending then that you'll modify it with the excluding the comatose, and and you're asking for full endorsement or time limited?
Time limited endorsement.
Limited endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone on the committee have any additional questions that they need answered in order to feel comfortable voting on time limited? Okay, measure 19, loss of control of the bowel and bladder.
Okay, we just flip to that. And actually, I probably 19 and 20 could be looked at sort of to an extent together. So with this particular measure, percent of low-risk residents who lose control of their bowel or bladder, again, we addressed the issue with the missing data, and there was another recommendation to pair it with Measure 20 for reporting percent of long-stay residents who have had a catheter inserted and left in their bladder. And we absolutely note the recommendation of the steering committee, and this will be communicated to the business owner component of CMS in terms of reporting them, you know, reporting them specifically together. And I believe that, again, with the measure 20 for the percent of long-stay residents who have had a cath inserted and left in their bladder, there was the issue of defining the long-stay measures, the missing data, and then also to the measure should be paired with 19 for reporting patients who lose control of their bowel or bladder. So I think that, you know, this is something that we will address with CMS in regards to reporting it as a paired measure.
So just to clarify, it's that the public reporting of measures and how they're displayed on the site, it's actually under the control of a different component within CMS. It's not under the Office of Clinical Standards and Quality, but we can make that recommendation to them in terms of how it's displayed as a paired item.
Any additional questions, RTI?
Maybe one, Jeff. This is Bill again.
Yeah.
Both with 19 and 20, as I'm understanding these are both recommended for full endorsement, not time limited. On the others that we've talked about, you know, kind of that analysis of the impact of the missing data would be during that time limited period. How does that analysis then impact anything if what we're voting on is full endorsement?
That would be to RTI.
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, we know that for these two measures, the MDS 2.0 items, which are, you know, virtually the same for the MDS 3.0. that the missing data was, extremely low and did not affect the reporting of the measure.
So what is the problem with removing that then?
I think our concern was that given historically that the missing data had been excluded, and also that concerns about if data was forced, that there really wouldn't be any effect on public reporting in regards to this particular measure. However, I mean, that said, if you would want to go forward with time-limited endorsement, and we could provided analysis after we review the data again for the MDS 3.0, we'd be happy to do that.
I think that this is Sheila Bernard from RTI. I think that there was also another thought that we had about the missingness, and that is that when the data are sent to CMS and the nursing home knows that a missing item is assumed to be a low-risk resident has now lost control of bowel and bladder, we would rather understand the pattern of missingness and be able to look at that than force a response on the part of the nursing home that may submit an observation in order to avoid having a patient be assumed to have bowel bladder problems. And so we would like to look at the pattern of missingness and to date, it's really not been a huge problem with the MDS 2.0. We want to understand what the missing data issue may be in 3.0, rather than making providing any incentive to submit data that may not be as accurate.
This is Dee Dee. I mean, if this is not time-limited endorsement, then it almost defines what the other measures are going to be, because you don't want this to be handled inconsistently over the measures. I mean, it is with immunization, but you can make a rationale that those two are sort of different from all these others. So I can't imagine how we could do anything other than limited endorsement at this point because of the issue of missingness, and that is going to be evaluated, and that's one of the reasons why it's limited endorsement for the other measures.
Well, I'd kind of thought the same, and that's why I asked the question.
Suzanne, do you want to help us with that?
Well, Karen, are you on the line? Can you speak to whether or not we can change this to time limited?
Well, I think if that's going to be the major issue, we can probably consider that. I mean, typically, if a measure has reliability and validity testing, then that encompasses this measure as it was submitted with the specifications of how missing is handled. So, you know, so to a certain extent, even though, you know, these additional analyses may not have been done, if the reliability and validity data were sufficient, then that's reliability and validity on the measure as it's specified, including how missing data are handled. But if that's going to be a sticking point, then we certainly consider it. So is that? I guess we need to know that for the voting, or maybe we can actually incorporate that into the voting. But is that? Can you? David, could you kind of get a sense of that, if that's where the steering committee wants to go with this?
Yeah. Where would you guys like to go? And let me back up. When we vote, we get to vote on each of the different categories, right? Some of us could vote to reject, some could vote for time limited, and some can vote to not time limited, correct?
Well, normally normally whether a measure is eligible for time limited endorsement is kind of a set thing. It's either been submitted with testing or it has not. And so it's not like you would vote for time limited and some vote for full. We have a recommendation that's put forward, and time-limited endorsement is very specific to measures that do not have reliability and validity testing. So this would be a bit of an exception, and we would need to put forward a recommendation that everyone would be voting on it the same way.
Well, this is Dee Dee, and I can tell you, for me, this is a validity issue. It's a face validity issue, and I think that we should vote on it as a time limited.
This is Pat Rosenbaum, and I agree with that.
Okay, are there any